in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Karen Cataline back in the saddle for our Thursday edition of Spouting Off. If you'd like to join us and you're listening live, 603-816-1590. If you're listening on the podcast, just jot that number down if you'd like to join the conversation, 603-816-1590, and visit us at WSMN.live every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Then that show goes all over, and you get a chance to listen to it in a variety of venues. Well, boy, take your pick of issues. And we're going to talk about a lot of them today. But in this first segment, I thought I'd take some time to talk about this interesting phenomenon of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. throwing his hat in the ring into the Democrat primary to run for president. Now, I just listened to a very short video that I did not have time to send to our esteemed producer so you could hear it. So I just posted it on my Twitter page. It's a lot easier, less copyright issues. Otherwise, I'd post it on my page. So the actual video is there. Just go to Karen Cataline, or as they say, at Karen Cataline, and you can listen to a very short video of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This is the first Kennedy I've liked in a whole long time. And I find it intriguing and fascinating that he not only has had a strong voice against the COVID hoax, in the midst of his, because he's still a Democrat, entire party that simply rolled over, took orders, did what they were told, demonized their friends and family for not going along. They became the little dutiful dictators and brown shirts telling their fellow citizens that they had no right to question, they had no right to object, they had no right to disagree. That happened seemingly in a flash, right? The COVID just happened, and all of a sudden, people came out of the woodwork and showed themselves for the dictators they really were. How many Republicans actually stood up on the issue of thousands of elderly people being systematically killed in the United States of America? There was a I guess it was an aircraft carrier in the Hudson River that was commissioned to take COVID patients at an early time when we didn't know what it was, what it was going to do, wreak havoc. People were, of course, terrified. With the help of the ever-present fear-mongering media. And what did Andrew Cuomo do and several other governors around the country? This has been shut up, and you know about it. They sent COVID patients forcibly into the most vulnerable populations in the world. At that time, yes, I'll get back to RFK in a minute, because he spoke out about it. He's been speaking out courageously on all of the COVID lies. Lies, I tell you. But at that time, when this happened, anybody who was watching was profoundly and deeply concerned about the reckless disregard for life and what that meant for the respect for human life, innocent human life, for all the rest of us. And 3.5 years later, roughly, give or take, we are watching and seeing how that ushered in an attitude of complete and utter contempt for life. We are seeing things we never thought we'd see. Human beings worshiping devils and deciding that they will be God, not only in their own life, which if they wish, you know, this is used to be a free country, but they will impose themselves on as gods on the rest of us. This has been a test for all of us as to what kind of character and integrity we have. This has been a test as to what price we are or are not willing to pay for standing up for the truth, standing up for our God-given rights that are enshrined in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has shown himself from the very beginning to, not only has he written a book about Fauci, and we talked about it at great length, but at his own peril, and it shouldn't have to be that way in America to present an alternate view and make your case so that consenting adults can decide for themselves what they think. The COVID also ushered in this view that we're going to impose a narrative upon you. And if you dare to disagree, question, debate, ask questions, or say, you know what, I'm not buying that, you will be not just called on the carpet, but persecuted. You'll be blamed for the so-called pandemic yourself. If you refuse an injection of very, very could be, we keep finding out, could be damaging, dangerous, and certainly not effective, you will be blamed for the pandemic. How many times was Biden told to say, because I don't think he said it on his own, as soon as he said it, everybody else said it, just like a bunch of sheep. It is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Notice how they backed off of that one after it was determined that people who had been vaccinated were in the hospital in much greater numbers, and that this shot that was forced upon us all turned out to be completely ineffective. Then they changed their tune and they said, well, it won't make you as sick. What about the people in hospitals because of the virus who were found to have taken the vax dutifully as they were told to do, lied to, coerced? So, not that I have any feelings about that, you understand. And I respect enormously Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Never thought I'd say that. But guess what? We're living in extraordinary times. And the audio that RFK Jr. Puts out there says that this is not an ordinary circumstance. Ordinarily, I would never be running for president. You know, he's a Kennedy, all of that. Strange family, his generation, and even beyond. Fascinating part of American lore, but there aren't a lot of real stellar Kennedys in his generation, and he's stepping up to the plate. What he said is, ordinarily, I wouldn't be doing this, but these are not ordinary times. I am, and I quote, watching my country being stolen from me. How about that? He says, I don't want the Democrat Party to be the party of fear, pharma, war, and censorship. Now think about that. Every single one of the things he mentioned and more, I guess he could also talk about pornography in schools, mastectomies for 9-year-olds, men and women's sports, on and on and on it goes, an agenda that nobody voted for, I submit to you. Every single one of these things, fear, pharma, war, and censorship, I don't know about the fear part, that's kind of esoteric, are things the left used to stand against. They were against big pharma. They were anti-war. They were the loudest anti-war people. My husband and I are now watching We're binge watching the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel because the fifth season, thank you, the fifth season is coming out. And somehow my dear sweet husband got interested because it is funny stuff. And among those things is this ever-persistent character. Yes, I'll get back to RFK Jr. This persistent character of Lenny Bruce, who I've talked about a great deal. I enjoyed studying about his life because he railed against censorship, which in his case was more pornography and offensive speech. He was a darling of the left. Now, Hollywood makes this Mrs. Maisel thing in which Lenny Bruce's character is there. And yet Hollywood is, and not only just Hollywood, but the radical left to which they march in lockstep, are the leaders of censorship in this country. They believe thoughts, ideas, words are dangerous, but evidently they don't believe that rioting and looting in the streets are dangerous at all to cities, as long as you are a darling of the left, as long as you are touting ideas that the left wants you to tout, like taking away police from law-abiding citizens and from inner cities to leave them as prey from the criminals that they allowed into our open borders, and then they emptied the prisons. They imprisoned law-abiding citizens during the surreal times of COVID, and they emptied the prisons and they imprisoned law-abiding citizens. How about that? So RFK Jr. presents a fascinating challenge to all of this. And I might add, one that most, the great many Republicans, I'm glad they have control of the House right now. Not sure how that happened, frankly. Other than the 20 that forced McCarthy and maybe a few others, Republicans have not led on principle, on First Amendment rights. And yet here comes RFK Jr. talking about how he does not want his party to be the party of fear, pharma, war, and censorship. This is going to be fun to watch, ladies and gentlemen. Buckle your seatbelts and buckle them for our guests, which are coming up next. Karen Cataline, you're listening to Spouting Off. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
One of the things that I really like about MyPillow is the support. It gives my neck a little hug.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Call or go online to take advantage of my best offer ever. For a limited time, when you use your promo code, you can get premium MyPillows regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. That's 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Put a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat in silence. We apply what we learn to life, the bills, the job, the family, things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, Don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
The Reading Foundation provides evaluation and tutorial programs based upon the Orton-Gillingham philosophy of learning, based upon the study of language, how children acquire language, and the mechanisms involved in learning. All the learning pathways of the brain, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and tactile, are addressed and strengthened to build a strong foundation for the acquisition of reading skills. If you are interested in learning more, please contact the Reading Foundation for more information. The Reading Foundation is at 10 Northern Boulevard, Unit 19, Amherst, New Hampshire, 03031. Or you can email us at readingfoundation_rf@yahoo.com. And of course, you can call anytime at 603-882-0992. The Reading Foundation, Amherst, New Hampshire.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. I'm your host, Karen Cataline, and grateful and pleased to be sitting in the chair and exercising my First Amendment rights. I hope you will continue to do the same. Never has it been more important. No one has a monopoly on the truth. And well, let's leave it there. I have a terrific guest. His name is Dave Gentry. He's the CEO of Red Chip Companies, Inc., and it's an investor relations and media firm. He's also the author of Small Stocks, Big Money, published by Wiley. In 1994, he co-founded the First Amendment Coalition. Boy, how important is that today? As I mentioned, an independent, nonprofit, collegiate-based student organization, and it received national and international attention for its work, his work, defending free speech on college campuses. Mr. Gentry's activism led to his publication and 100-plus cases of campus censorship. And boy, that censorship has expanded out to every single one of us. Dave Gentry, thank you so much for joining us here on Spouting Off.
Thank you, Karen. Appreciate it.
Well, it's good to have you. So there's this huge story, and I'd love for you to catch people up, and then we'll move to what it all means and what it means for someone like yourself who's been working in this arena for a long time. In the wake of the attack on Riley Gaines, people are beginning to wonder if college students ought to be expelled for violent protests. Of course, the people in the administration seem to agree with them when they protest. But what say you about that? And as I say, why don't we catch up a little bit, people up on Riley Gaines and why she was attacked?
We've been seeing these sorts of attacks, maybe not quite as dramatic as this, but we have seen them as dramatic as this. And the administration, of course, did nothing. They put her in a safe room for 3 hours. And she said, if I don't do something, they're not going to do anything. So she's suing the student and suing the university. This is just another example how the woke left attempts to intimidate, coerce, and inculcate students with their woke ideology. So they're shutting down freedom of speech. And in this sense, then they are acting as fascist, and that's what we need to call them. That's what they are. They have no understanding of the history of America, how we were founded on the principles of freedom of speech and freedom of press. And you have to have the ability to have civil debate and reasoned analysis and not be afraid to be challenged with difficult ideas.
Exactly. And that's the place for college anyway, supposedly, but not anymore. I was remiss. Just to let people know, Riley Gaines made the terrible faux pas of standing up for women's sports and against men masquerading as women and stealing the glory of women's sports, which once upon a time the left used to actually revere, but not anymore. So as I remember, there are actually some companies who are saying that if they came from places where there was unbridled rioting because they didn't like what someone was saying, like I believe Stanford, that they weren't going to hire them from there. Is that true? And do you think that works?
Well, no, of course it doesn't work. I will say about the Stanford case, that's where the Trump-appointed judge was speaking to the law students, and a dean at Stanford co-opted his speech, shut him down, gave her own speech. Hmm. Thankfully, the president of Stanford University he removed her, he put her on leave, and he apologized to this Trump-appointed judge. So he stood up for freedom of speech. Good. So, you know, that's a bright spot. Obviously, when you start hiring based on political views and worldview, then you've crossed a very dangerous line. The problem we have is this. the woke movement, and this, one example, this idea that a man can become a woman but through some form of, you know, mental masturbation or some surgery. Because they don't believe in truth. They don't believe there is objective truth. You know, Harold Bloom commented on this fact in his book, The Closing of the American Mind, back in, I believe, 1991. And he said the overriding theme, the overriding true, quote, truth that they're taught in our universities is that there is no objective truth. And so if there is no objective truth, then of course, if you want to will yourself and say you're a man, but you're a woman, then that's where this leads. So it's the absence of reason. And again, when they're shutting down free speech rights, it's an imposition of a particular ideology. And ironically, while they don't believe in objective truth, they believe in their truth, and their truth, if we oppose their truth, what they consider truth, then we're bigots. Well, that's utter hypocrisy, of course.
Isn't that interesting, too, is that all of their rules and their dictates apply to everyone else but themselves, right? We're
Yes.
supposed to be tolerant, but they don't have to be. They don't.
Right.
They can't be bigots, but we can be bigots simply by criticizing somebody who happens to belong to a certain group. How do you, as a person who's been doing this for so long, my goodness, give us some of the things that you have done or have talked about that are effective against this crazy-making, cult-like ideology that we are watching?
Yeah, so let's be clear. You know, this in the early 90s, I was a grad student at the University of Florida, and we were seeing, you know, the imposition of ideology through seminars, inculcating students with a particular belief or way of looking at these issues. We were seeing students being censored, punished because they wore a T-shirt with a Mexican theme because the fraternity was having a Mexican themed party.
Cultural appropriation, right?
Yeah, just ridiculous things.
Yeah, ridiculous.
A graduate a professor had a picture of his wife in a bikini on his desk, and the person he shared that office with told him to remove it. The university made him remove it because it was offensive to her. So all sorts of things, speech, vaguely written speech codes, so they could punish students through these indoctrination seminars on these complex social moral issues. So all sorts of things. So we called on students from all across the country, in fact, about 50 universities, and we said, let's take the fight to the epicenter of then what we call political correctness at Harvard. And that's what we did in April of 1994. Students from 50 universities came. We had, you know, traditional Democrat liberal speakers like Richard Cohen from the Washington Post speak mm-hmm. at this conference, as well as people like David Horowitz, Stephen Boss from the National Association of Scholars. And we ratified a document called the Cambridge Declaration. The Cambridge Declaration was a defense of the Western tradition. It was the defense of intellectual freedom, of academic freedom, They called on university professors, students, and administrators to move away from two sets of standards, one for the, you know, favored status class, if you will, and another set of standards for those who did not follow that, you know, that left-wing ideology. So, you know, and so this is something I led in the 90s. I've been a businessman over the years, but I decided recently to come out and start talking about these issues because they're so important to defend this, you know, the Western tradition in this country and all the freedoms that made us the leader of the free world.
Yes, I think we're finding that out, that the things that have been, I guess, tried out in petri dishes, like on black communities in inner cities, dependence on government and lack of police and people living on top of each other, and colleges taking away people's free speech rights and introducing all this lingo and language that we are somehow forced or required to use, is now all of that is being imposed on the greater population, all of us. Maybe you could speak to that, because what you see in colleges and universities, we're seeing everywhere else now, and your work couldn't be more important than it is now.
Well, look, the CEOs running these corporations are products of the university system, products of the you know, they were in the university in the 90s, which was, you know, the beginning of this woke movement. We called it political correctness. And so, you know, what you have to understand, again, is that they have turned the woke movement has turned this into it's a scheme, it's a racket. And in that racket, they want brand equity. I want equity based not on the fact that I have natural rights, that God-given rights to be treated equally and fairly under the law. That's what the Constitution is about, natural rights, based on the fact that there's a higher power, a transcendent power, that our rights don't come from the state. They don't come from the government.
Right.
That's their early civil rights leaders. That's what they believed, Martin Luther King Jr. and others. That philosophy was sort of co-opted later on. And what we see now is, I want special treatment, not just equal treatment, but special treatment because of my sexual orientation, identity, or because of my ethnicity. Whereas the Constitution is about, we're all created equal under God. So now that's led to the idea of, for example, reparations. And so you're going to pay me for things that happened, you know, 100 years ago, which this country has done an incredible amount to correct, more than any country in the world. And of course, I'm referring to slavery.
Yes.
And the Black Lives Matter movement raised tens of millions of dollars on guilt, you know, white guilt, from these corporations that somehow thought they had to support them in order to gain the credibility, the credence in the marketplace from consumers. And that's mainstream America believes in right and wrong. Mainstream America believes there are objective truths. This is a tyranny of the minority, and we have to stand up to it.
Yeah, give us some in our you know, we have about maybe 3.5 minutes left. Give us some of your the benefit of your expertise as to what we can do to keep fighting against this. Because right now, some of us feel like you know, we're David and they're Goliath. You know, they are pushing this down our throat at a stunning degree, and they seem to be succeeding. What are we doing to fight against?
Well, look, it is pervasive. Again, there are some highlights. You know, I think you probably saw the Oxford debate, the comedian that showed the hypocrisy and the idiocy of the woke movement and their views. You know, that gained widespread attention in this country. You saw the president of Cornell stand up for free speech recently when he said, students, no, we're not going to require our teachers to warn you of triggering events that we're going to discuss in the classroom. We're not going to self-censor our professors. We're going to stand up for free speech. You're going to have to learn to deal with difficult ideas and challenging ideas without having to go to a room where you can have someone babysit you and et cetera. But so you have to stand up. So you go to the if you're parents, you go to the school board meeting and you stand up to this curriculum, this critical race theory, and say, we don't want our children taught critical race theory. We don't want them to be taught history through the lens of simply colonialism and imperialism. You've got to elect local state government officials. Students can organize. We held this conference at Harvard in 94. We set up 50 chapters across the country defending intellectual freedom. We called on alumni of these universities to make them aware of what these administrators were doing to impose their ideology on students. So you have to be active. You have to have courage. And there needs to be, in our universities, we need to teach American history. We need to teach the Western tradition and realize that, that from that comes all of the freedoms that we have and the prosperity we have because of our historical capacity for self-examination, just Socrates said, unexamined life is not a life worth living. That's why we became the greatest country. And they've turned it on their head through with their Marxist ideology. And but I'm starting to see some signs that we may be getting a bigger voice in this argument.
Boy, I hope so. With our last little bit of time left, Dave Gentry is our guest. Talk about Red Chip Companies, how they can find you, follow you, and read more.
Well, sure. The redchip.com, we're an investor relations firm. We represent smaller cap companies, small emerging growth companies in a variety of sectors. And so these companies hire us to help put the national spotlight on them so investors can learn about these smaller companies. It's the riskiest asset class, small caps and micro caps, but you can make a lot of money. Also, they can visit the Gentry Report, which comes out every Thursday at noon. And that is a publication which looks at literature, poetry, history, finance, science. And so it's a cornucopia of ideas, sort of a history of ideas, and it comes out again every Thursday.
Sounds perfect. Sounds fascinating. Dave Gentry, you know how to do radio. You ended at a perfect time. Thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you. We appreciate your perspective and the work that you're doing for all of us, really. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. So we are going to move on after the break and have our weekly segment with an Epoch Times reporter. Don't go away. We'll have that when we get back.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. They're not out to tell you the truth of what's happening. They're out to tell you the picture of the world that they represent. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in facts, and prevent people from being misled. The Epoch Times is independent. We're not controlled by any special interest, and we never will be. This is a battle. A battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would ensnare this country in ignorance and between a media that wants to present you with the truth. Subscribe today to our digital edition at theepochtimes.com and join the Americans who are seeking truth and tradition. Read the difference on all your devices. We'd love to have you on board.
Are you tired of the same old snacks? Looking for something a little healthier than that bag of chips or candy bar? Even your average bag of trail mix these days is little more than peanuts, raisins, and candy-coated chocolate. Not very healthy, is it? Allow me to introduce you to White Mountain Munchies. Made from 100% all-natural ingredients, White Mountain Munchies combines unique flavors with nutritional value that will tingle your taste buds and strengthen and sustain your overall health and wellness. Eating good never tasted so good. From Maggie's Maple Madness to Hannah's Heavenly Harvest, Grayson's Getaway Goodies, and our limited edition Christmas blend, Jacoby's Jolly Jumble, White Mountain Munchies offers nutritious and delicious snacks that the whole family is sure to love. Pick yours up now through our easy-to-use online store at whitemountainmunchies.com. White Mountain Munchies, non-GMO when you're on the go.
The Village Network was created for only one reason, to keep those 62 and older in their home as long as possible, ideally for the rest of their life. The Village Network is the answer for children who do not live nearby and worry about their parents being able to remain independently and safely at home. The Village Network has a network of trusted providers and volunteers who provide transportation, home repair, home-delivered meals, grocery shopping, and others who are there to help when you need them. We can even find someone to walk your dog. The Village Network does not charge thousands of dollars of upfront costs for services you may never need. With the Village Network, you only pay for services when you need them. Become a member of the Village Network today by calling 603-891-0008. That's 603-891-0008. The Village Network. Become a member today.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
Hi, it's Karen Cataline. It's been almost a decade since I wrote Fat Lash Food Police and the Fear of Thin. It's about my early experiences in child beauty pageants and being put on extreme diets. Remember when that was shocking? Sadly, that seems like child's play compared to what we are watching today when politicians and woke corporations are actually advocating for the sexualization of children. Everyone's children. We're watching a frontal attack on childhood innocence. This is one story, my story. Fat Lash illustrates and explains why good boundaries are essential for kids to grow up healthy. They need their parents to set them, not the government. Get Fat Lash today. It's available in paperback or ebook at Amazon or at my website, KarenCataline.com.
Karen Cataline got her parents to name her Karen before she was born, so she could grow up to be a punchline. Now here's more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. I always look forward to this segment every week. We have a reporter with the Epoch Times, and you know that we proudly feature the Epoch Times. They are one of our sponsors, and you just heard one of their ads. On the line right now is a reporter who we have had several times, and we always love having him on, Supreme Court correspondent, reporter for the Epoch Times, Matt Vadim, joins us right now on Spouting Off.
Hey, good to be here. How are you?
It is good to have you. And I'll tell you what, I was not apathetic in any way, shape, or form when I started to watch Clarence Thomas once again be in the crosshairs of the radical left. It's not exactly as if they would benefit by impeaching or getting rid of the most conservative, arguably, judge on the court after 30 plus years of making his life a living hell. Oh my God, let's talk about this. How transparent could it be? What do we got? What do we not know about this situation, and how far do you think it's going to go?
Well, they really would like to get rid of Clarence Thomas from the court, but I don't think they're going to succeed. You see, he's accused of violating ethics requirements of failing to report some fairly luxurious trips that he took with his wife through a billionaire Republican donor in Texas named Harlan Crow, and he didn't disclose those, but lawyers that I've spoken to, and I wrote this at the Epoch Times, aren't so sure he has to comply because federal rules about the federal judiciary disclosing things don't apply to Supreme Court justices. The Supreme Court is an entity unto itself because it was created by the Constitution, not by Congress, unlike the lower courts, right? Like your local U.S. District Court or your U.S. Court of Appeal. They have to follow the ethics guidelines, but the Supreme Court doesn't. But now, this doesn't mean Clarence Thomas has necessarily done anything wrong, anything, you know, evil in and of itself. He just hasn't. He didn't file the disclosures saying that he had accepted gifts, and it's not clear to me why he would have to file them anyway. Because his friend Harlan Crow, who gave him the trips and who bought his mother's house, hasn't had any business before the Supreme Court. And normally, when you have a conflict of interest, you know, it has to do with a case being before the court. It's not a conflict of interest to know, to be friends with wealthy people who have political views. But the left is trying to change the rules.
How do they get away with this stuff? This is what I don't understand. You're the expert. Help us understand, Matt, if you can.
I guess people don't follow these things closely, and on the face of it, it would sound people don't understand why a Supreme Court justice wouldn't have to follow the same rules as, you know, as your local U.S. District Court judge or your local U.S. Court of Appeals judge. People don't grasp the difference. But what is really important here is that this man has no, Harlan Crow, his friend, has no business before the court. And you can't just say there's a conflict of interest because somebody's your friend. It doesn't make any sense. There's no case before the court. So the argument fails right there. But they get away with this because they keep driving the point home and saying it over and over and over again. That this is just bad that Clarence Thomas has wealthy friends who give him things. And, you know, that's... I wish I had friends
and
like that.
There, you know, gosh, you know, there's no giant elephant living in the living room, like glaring amounts of actual kickbacks from China to the Biden family. I mean,
right,
this
absolutely.
Is a prime example of anarcho-tyranny. Anarchy for us, we get to do anything we want. Tyranny for our enemies. Meanwhile, don't they want to get rid of Clarence Thomas? They got AOC to immediately start calling for his impeachment. He should step down. There's no... There's no political benefit to getting Clarence Thomas to step down so that Biden can appoint another radical leftist judge, is there? Jeez.
Well, the left seems to think that the louder you repeat an argument, the more effective it is. So they just say it, make it louder, and say it over and over again in the hopes that they're going to get somewhere with it.
And there are useful idiots.
And it resonates. It resonates with the kookier members of their base, who are all about, you know, lynching the rich.
That is a
famous
conflict. That is a contradiction in terms. The kookier parts of their base.
Well, I was trying to be. I was trying to be polite, but and
right.
Failing, I guess.
You're a lot of fun, Matt. I like having you on.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. I interrupted.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's no. In the traditional sense, there's no conflict of interest. If a case involving Harlan Crow or maybe his business, he's a real estate developer, apparently, were to come before the court and Clarence Thomas were to not recuse himself, now that could be a problem. But that hasn't happened. Now, they've tried to nail him by saying that because his wife, Ginny Thomas, has been active in Republican politics as an outspoken supporter of former President Donald Trump, that Justice Thomas should have recused himself from any of the election challenges that came before the U.S. Supreme Court. And a couple did, but they didn't go very far. But he didn't recuse himself from them. But they're saying because his wife is active, he should have. And, you know, if you start going down that road, then nobody, you know, you have people getting judges recusing themselves all the time for no reason at all. If Justice Thomas had actually been a part of, you know, the Trump campaign or the Trump administration or, you know, had some sort of obvious tie to Donald Trump, maybe it would make sense to, you know, to say he has to recuse himself in those election challenges. But he doesn't. He just happens to be a right-wing guy, and he's the worst kind in the eyes of the left because he's a conservative Republican black man.
Who happens
and that
to
is,
be black.
That is very offensive to the left because they think that they own all the votes of black people. And how
they
dare
think they
he
own
betray
blacks
his race.
Too. It's another right. plantation where we own you, and if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. Who said that? I can't remember.
Yeah, Joe Biden said that. If you don't vote
I'm
for
kidding.
Me, you ain't black. That's right.
That's right.
Republicans are going to put you all in chains.
Yeah, he said
another
that
thing
too.
Biden said.
Talk about demagoguery. I mean, my heavens. The other thing that is so offensive to me, and just as an aside, I seem to remember Kagan not recusing herself on some of the abortion decisions when she was intricately involved in them when she was at Harvard. You could comment on that, but what I was, I'll also just piggyback on here and say that the utter brouhaha, I mean, it wasn't a brouhaha, it was an utter travesty of going after Clarence Thomas so he wouldn't be on the court at all. I thought quite differently when it was happening, but now watching the left as I have, it's clear that they didn't want a black conservative on the court either. And that's why they went to the mattresses over that one. 30 years later, they're still going after Clarence Thomas. It's
well, and it was always bogus. They remember there was a sexual harassment claim lodged by Anita Hill.
Right.
This, mediocre. She's now some mediocre law professor who got, you know, who got an appointment somewhere because she's famous and she's an important symbol for the left, I guess. And she never had a valid claim. You know, remember there was a claim that the Thomas was berating her and annoying her and saying, I found a pubic hair on my Coke and all this crazy stuff that was
crazy.
Seemingly made up. And the argument that never, the left could never explain, the thing they could never explain is if Thomas was such a terror and was such a terrible, tyrannical, oppressive, sexually, you know, harassing boss, then why did Anita Hill keep following him around when he got new jobs in Washington, D.C.? She stayed with him as his aide. So, you know, if it was so terrible, you would think she would have escaped and found a new job, but she never did that. And then she just came up with these claims, you know, more than 30 years ago and suddenly showed up when it looked like Clarence Thomas was going to be approved by the Senate. And ultimately he was after a fight. But, you know, they'll use this stuff to keep the pressure on. And I don't know if they really, the big top Democrats, you know, who are lawyers, think that they're going to succeed in ousting Clarence Thomas. They just want to, you know, raise money and have somebody to rail against, a villain
figure. And rough him
figure.
Up. And rough him
right.
up.
Right,
it,
right.
It's
they want to have
outrageous.
Their villain figure.
How come
right.
nobody's they, calling them racists? If you don't nominate a particular black actor to get an Oscar and then give them that Oscar because they're black, you're a racist. But this isn't racist? Why don't the Republicans stand up? What do you think about that? It's crazy that they're not screaming bloody murder.
Arguing, okay, opposing somebody because he's, you don't like his political views, you know, is not necessarily racist. But
no,
not but according to the left, it is when it suits their purposes.
Correct.
So because the left doesn't have any principles, and they,
That's right.
There's that old expression. You know, the only I paraphrase, the excuse, the justification is the revolution, right? They want certain things to happen.
Means justify the
end. They'll come up with any excuses, any rationalizations after the fact, if need be, for to justify their behavior. And going after lynching Clarence Thomas is very important to them. And if they don't succeed, at least they think they're going to benefit by, you know, keeping their supporters enraged. And,
well, it is outrageous.
And sending the money.
I'm suggesting this actually as a tactic. If they can call Mr. Potato Head racist, if they can call Mark Twain racist, whatever they want, they can call a highway racist as merely a tactic. We need to start calling them racists because by their very supposed definition by last Thursday, because it keeps changing, they are very much racist. The problem is we don't use the same tactics on them they use on us. It's kind of shouldn't happen that way, but it does. We got a couple of minutes. What do you want to leave us with, Matt Vadim? This is such an important issue, but you've written on so many other topics. You want to leave us with something in the last, I don't know, we got a minute.
Oh, well, the Supreme Court seems sympathetic on Monday to Gerald Groff, a mail carrier in Pennsylvania, an evangelical Christian who quit the post office because they were making him work on Sundays. He had started working out as like a rural carrier associate, I think that the expression is. And then after that, when the post office signed a contract with Amazon.com, he was told he had to do deliveries on Sunday, and he said, "I don't want to do deliveries on Sunday, because I'm a faithful Christian." And originally, they tried to accommodate him for a few years, but eventually, the post office stopped being interested in trying to accommodate him, and they made his life difficult. And he quit, and he sued, claiming he was being discriminated against. And the Supreme Court on Monday seemed pretty sympathetic to Gerald Groff, the mail carrier.
Uh-huh. And well, let's hope so, because
my guess is they're going to rule in his favor.
Well, let's hope so, because it's too bad you got to take your religious freedom that is already enshrined in the Constitution to the Supreme Court to have it upheld. Matt Vadim, read him at the Epoch Times, especially if you want to know what's going on with the Supreme Court. We always love having you, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Always a good time. Well, that does it for this edition. We'll have another one tomorrow, Friday, and wrap up the week here on Spouting Off. Take stand up, speak out.